Gotta be. Why would anybody do that for fun?
They're not exactly built for speed.
Yeah, well, you're not exactly built for effort.
Tell you what, it's mommy.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 463 for the week of June 12, 2023. I am Canceled Cafe David T. Cole, and I'm here with Crisp Thief Sarah D. Bunting.
Shocked and disappointed.
Controversial Britain's Got Talent winner Tara Ariano.
Woof!
And overloaded headmistress Maureen Ryan.
I won Britain's Got Talent. You did not.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she is a critic, reporter, now the author of Burn It Down, Power, Complicity, and A Call for Change in Hollywood. Back to join us again is Maureen Ryan. Hello, Mo!
Hello, Maureen!
And I am so happy to be here, and also because we are all here grammar nerds, I would like to just point out that it's a point of personal growth for me to allow an Oxford comma in the title of my first and so far only book. This is my truth, and I wanted to speak it plainly for some time, and I thought that this was a safe arena to do that. I had to sit by silently as these Oxford comma maniacs put that in the title of my book.
One of whom was thanked in your acknowledgement.
I know. Weird.
Crazy.
It's just a time of growth and change, and I'm glad to be here to talk about my own personal psychological issues for an hour.
You're so brave. Well, speaking of personal psychological issues, we are here to discuss the limited series adaptation of The Full Monty. 26 years ago, Simon Beaufoy wrote The Full Monty, the story of a group of laid-off steelworkers who try to make some money with a one-night-only male strip show. Four Oscar nominations, including a win for original score, ensued. Now Beaufoy, who was among those Oscar nominees for his screenplay, is back to let us know what Gaz, Dave, Gerald, Lomper, Horace, and Guy are up to now in a limited series on FX on Hulu. As you are listening to this, all eight episodes have dropped. Let's do the Chen check-in. Mo, should our listeners watch The Full Monty show?
Absolutely, if you want a cool, fun, low-key hang.
Sarah.
Maybe.
Dave.
It's a no for me.
It's the hardest no of this year. I can't believe it.
Wait.
Wow.
Harder than Dear Edward?
Yeah, I really was mad at it.
Big news.
Let's get into it. I'm afraid I have to start here, and this is a big spoiler for the end of the first episode. I'm going to need all the comedy shows to stop putting dogs at gunpoint. This has happened on two shows I have watched in the past week. Both billed as comedies. What the fuck, Sarah? I know you feel me.
I also was not a fan of painting the dog. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't, I don't care for that.
Right.
I mean, I get it, but I also don't think the show needed it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, where I came down on this is sort of where Mo is with it. It was a pleasure to watch these actors work. Talitha Wing, who plays Gaz's daughter, estranged sort of, but, you know, more like him than either of them would like to admit, etc.
Yeah.
Like, she's extremely charismatic and fun to watch. But it's one of those shows for me, like, I watched two episodes and I'm probably not going to go back to it. Like, if it were on, I would not flee the room. But it's one of those, like, it's too hard to pick it back up for me. It's like inessential, but it is a pleasure to be around them again, I guess.
Well, Mo, when you chose this or confirmed that you're interested in coming on to talk about it, one of the reasons was male nudity. That was one of the aspects that interested you. And we certainly did not get any in the first episode. So if I owe you an apology, I apologize.
You owe me more than an apology. I believe tacos next time I'm in Austin need to be literally on the table.
Sure.
You guys have known me for a while, and you have known for a long time that if there's anything I enjoy, it's middle-aged men in the north of England taking off their clothing.
Sure.
It's a huge part of my life, and didn't get it, but, you know,
maybe I will return to future episodes. You know, 80% for the dog and for Talisa Wing. And it's a very sweet show, which does have a point of very lightly and not in a way that's quite grim, which, you know, English shows can be, UK shows can be like grimmer than grim. If you're not wearing the saddest raincoat in the world.
Full Monty Happy Valley edition.
So there's I get it. Like, I get that the clinical depression is the vibe, but this is making the point that these people are still in difficult economic circumstances and society hasn't done much, if anything, for them. And in some ways, their lives are maybe even more, a little more desperate because of, you know, they're now older. It's less of a lark to be broke and scrambling around and doing dumb things. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the ensemble nature of the cast, but I absolutely agree that this is the IP trend coming for all of our brains. And I don't know, that's something that does not fill me with an enormous amount of happiness. Why not put this tremendous cast in something new? Apparently that is now against the law on both sides of the Atlantic. So what are you going to do?
The problem is, this really did feel like it started its life as a movie sequel. And, you know, as you watch these episodes, they are pretty flabby, not really well put together. Like, structure of it is very janky to me. But stick around if you don't think this thing gets grim, because it gets grim pretty quick.
Excellent.
Episode 2, spoiler alert, trigger alert. You know, we learned about attempted suicide of a minor. Whereas the movie was fun times in bad circumstances. Mm-hmm. This one is times in bad circumstances. It doesn't have the levity counterbalance the circumstances that the first one has. As you go further into the show, it gets more ponderous. One of the married couples in the movie, their child died, and, you know, there's all the follow-up from that. It doesn't really show signs of with steam building up to anything anytime soon as you start the series. You know, I can see the posts already. You can tell where the series is ending up with all the pieces they put down. You know, the daughter who's fucked up and kidnaps the dog, the kid in the school that doesn't have a father figure, Robert Carlyle's character, who's not really a good dad. How's it all going to come together? I don't know. It's a mystery. Who knows?
Wait, people need money, I'm hearing? Yeah. Huh. I wonder, based on the previous movie, I have no guesses about what they'll do for money. No, here's the thing.
Yeah. Every episode should have one problem solved by stripping, or why are we even here?
Yeah.
It's the Surf Dracula formula, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Even
Dracula.
If it's the thermometer's broken, it's too hot in here, what are we going to do? Even if it's as simple as that. Well, yes. I guess we strip.
Yeah.
Problem number one.
All my clothes got wet in this bathroom with a leak that somehow also ends up ruining a music room. Got to take them off. Yeah. I mean, the movie, and we watched the movie first. It is streaming on Max. HBO Max, aka Max. If you want to watch that instead or in addition to, it is there for you. And it's a breezy 90 minutes. It is like roughly a fifth of the length of the show, like the entire series. There is not a bit of fat on it. Like, dark stuff happens. There's a suicide joke in that one too. But the difference is, it's an adult and he gets rescued immediately. And here it's like Dave said, it's like a quite young child talking about having attempted suicide, or his mother references. And it's, if the point is like, there's no hopefulness in Sheffield anymore, not even the tiny amount that there was in 1997. It's like, okay, like I believe you, but I don't know if this is the format that you should be using to tell me the story. Like, I don't want it to be, I know this much is true either, but there has to be a middle ground where it's like, someone has to get a win. In the first 2 hours, there's like none. It's so bleak. It's so bleak to me.
My point of view on this is that, you know, to me, the absolute apex of vibes only was Le Revenant, the return, the French version, not the American one, which I will talk about for 2 to 3 hours at any prompting, any party, anytime about how bad it was.
Yes.
But in that show, misunderstood, like, if you're doing vibes, that's your whole thing. Those vibes better be great.
Yeah.
And or the characters are so winning that I do not care. Have a little structure, have a little escapade or a few plots, you know, things happening and whatnot. And I do think the Full Monty, again, for me, it's the cast, including a number of people in the newer to the property, you know, like the younger people and whatnot. Everyone gets the brief. Everyone is really good. Talitha Wing in particular is, as you said, very charismatic, very good.
Yep.
I look forward to her only ever starring in IP-derived things for the rest of her adult life. If it's a hangout, it better be an A-plus hangout.
Yeah.
And this is what people don't understand. I feel like a lot of shows are like, well, we were really trying to construct an atmosphere. Okay, if the only thing you have is an atmosphere, a feeling, you have to be on such a high level, like the show Raised by Wolves. I don't understand 80% of what happened. That is very much weird sci-fi stuff is happening.
Yeah.
We don't really know what's going on, mm-hmm. but it's at such a high level aesthetically and atmospherically that I'm like, I don't care. It's just like weird,
yeah.
weird planet, interplanetary shit. And I'm in. Like, it's just not, people don't get that you have to do more if you're not actually leaning on plot that much.
Also that if you're gonna go for a vibe, like a prestige TV vibe, so-called, doesn't have to be unrelentingly mm-hmm. fucking grim. Like,
yeah.
you're allowed to be funny. People are allowed to have good things happen to them. And if this is a dramedy, fine, but you're allowed to make it 32 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Lasso?
You can do that. Yeah, yes, yeah. thank you. I mean, I'm not a Ted Lasso guy, but like at least they understand that the show, like episodes find their own length. And this just felt like it didn't quite know what vibe it was going for. And it felt obligated to be capital S serious. And I don't think that was the movie's basic nature.
Right.
So, yeah, it just seems like I like these characters. I like these actors. This is not quite it. And I agree with Dave. This started as a feature sequel and got
For
spread
sure.
out.
I mean, I got to believe it. The other problem with the vibe is that it's that, but it's also like low energy in the way that defeated people bring to the table.
Yeah.
And there is a setting in the show, a cafe that one of the original characters from the movie opens up. The other people just kind of congregate there and just be silent, stoic, sad, and complain about things. And that is sort of like the other part of it, which is like, yeah, but like what is there to mine there beyond just being sad? And they don't really flip it at that point like the movie did, which is like, okay, you know, where's the montage to, is the montage in relative terms in episode 6 because we're now dealing with a whole long piece of work instead of a 90-minute movie?
Mm-hmm.
If so, mm-hmm. then you just had to argue more for a streaming movie because it right. is way too flabby for this.
Yeah.
And there's just like
yeah.
way too much that we don't need to see in the meantime. And it really brings the whole proceeding down. Even if there are beats about characters you like and you enjoy the concept of seeing these people again.
Yeah, people can be embattled, but like they have a good marriage. They are good friends. They are, you know, supportive of each other. Like Destiny could have a shitty dad, but a good mom. But no, she has to have two shitty parents plus twin half, apparently, sisters that she's also like basically looking after. Like, this is what I mean where it's like, I get the point, but it's like it would be easier to take if this were in a movie form, whereas like having 6 more hours of this, no thank you.
No, I mean, I think what we're seeing a lot is a lack of curation. And I'm not mm-hmm. even just saying this show in particular. It's like, what's every idea we ever had for this property?
Right.
No, what are the best ideas for this property? Not like the whole, like, again, like, okay, I'm doing it. It's the Full Monty. It's everything. And the kitchen sink, and then yeah. the neighbor's kitchen sink, and yep. like, okay,
which is
but like,
right,
yeah. yeah, and it's, there's a flooding the kitchen, it's
it
bad.
Fell through the floor, yeah.
You gotta pick and choose, and I feel like we've talked about this either just as friends or on various things we've written or said, podcasts and whatnot. Grim doesn't equal serious.
Right.
That's the biggest, one of the biggest mistakes entertainment properties make. Why is that? I've been trying to pick apart that element of like the whole prestige world for my entire life because the Breaking Bad characters are like funny or
yes.
you know like something weird happens
or Mad Men yeah
Succession yeah. is quite possibly one of the funniest shows any of us has ever seen. Mm-hmm. One of my pet peeves is human beings aren't like this.
Yeah.
No human being. I mean, we've all been through terrible situations and made jokes about it or eaten a sandwich or, you know what I mean? Like, no human being exists in just this small array of really negative vibes or feelings or events. That's not a real thing, because when you're at the bedside of someone who's dying, you go out in the hallway and you talk about, you know, your least favorite episode of the comedy you're watching. You know, like, that normal people do normal people stuff. Yeah. We're all a big bag of weird contradictions. And, you know, I do think that you're right. Like, the cafe scenes in The Full Monty could answer the question. And I think a little bit they do. But because of the whole, like, we're British Northern men and we're reticent, blah, 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 I get it. Married to an Englishman, like, I have documentation that I understand how this works. Why are they still in each other's lives? Like, even a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even the characters from the first one that were sort of jovial and buoyant, they're all the same character in this one. They've managed to turn these six beautiful potatoes into a plate of mashed potatoes. Like, they're all the same now.
Yeah.
Like, I had trouble. I had to actually pause it. Is that character a new character, or is that one of the original guys from the...
Yeah.
Not only because they all have white hair now and they're all doughy guys.
Sure.
But they all sort of have the same vibe. Mm-hmm. The guy that was, like, the young hot shit in the movie... Like, he is just sort of like there as well. He's like, he's a big sigh, you know?
Still a full-time nobody. Well, and then they're also using those luncheonette scenes to, like, you're having, like, chautauquas about cancel culture and how terrible Boris Johnson is. And it's like, oh my God, we know, we're fucking out here living it right now.
Yes.
We are eating a sandwich, though, like Mo said. So, like, you're in a cafe, show us some chips.
I feel like they throw dialogue in there and then don't take it anywhere.
Right.
Like, what? Okay, and?
Yes.
I don't get it.
Yeah. It's a lot of presenting ideas, and you're so right. Curation is the problem. Like, we talk about it every time we talk about comedy, like how important editing is, and that's what's missing here. Like, not even just editing the topics or the material being covered, but, like, the editing the film. So, like, take out some of those long silences, cut shit where it's funny, and move on to something else. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, shall we cut this here?
Yes.
It is time for Around the Dial. Our first stop is, as always, with Tara. Tara, what do you got?
The final season of Never Have I Ever dropped last week. Our protagonist, Davey, is now in her senior year of high school, but she definitely has not outgrown drama. In the season 3 finale, she surprised her on-again, off-again boyfriend slash academic rival, Ben, by showing up at his house to have sex with him. And the 4th season picks up right after that. Neither of them knows how to act, and unintentionally they offend each other, leading to misunderstandings and big fights when school starts back up. I continue to appreciate the fact that Davey has a lot of anger, and the show doesn't try to minimize or soften it. We're on her side usually until we're not, and then she has to deal with the fallout of her rages, which sometimes initially seem like they're totally justified. It's unfortunate that one instance of Davey's very public verbal meltdowns accidentally takes down Jenny O'Hara, Mrs. Scott Scanlon's mom herself from 90210.
Look out.
but maybe that lady should have retired, because she would have avoided this if she had. The season introduces a new character early on, Ethan, who is played by Michael Cimino from Love, Victor. In this show, he's definitely into girls, specifically Davey, when she's nervous about having sex with him since her first time wasn't great. He says, that's because you weren't having sex with me. So I must say, I also appreciate this is still one of the horniest shows on TV, because even Davey's mom, Nalini, is getting a hot love interest, it seems, a contractor named Andres. He is the single father of one of Davey's nemeses, Ben's current girlfriend, Margo. He's played by Ivan Hernandez, a.k.a. Carrie's hot podcast producer from And Just Like That. So get it, Nalini. Mm-hmm. One, however, dark spot from the early going of the season, I have not finished it yet, is that Davey's grandmother, Nirmala, gets a boyfriend, too. His name is Len. For truly no reason I can possibly fathom, He is played by Jeff Garlin, and several blogs published posts last week saying his appearance on this show, which has always been a love story between mother and daughter fundamentally, really soured viewers' experiences of watching it. You can Google those, and if you don't immediately know what those commentators' issue with him is, you can read reporting about him by Mo Ryan. We will link to her interview with him in Vanity Fair, which went up, I'm going to say, hours before he left the Goldbergs, and to an excerpt about him from Burn It Down. It is a good show still. I'm looking forward to finishing it this week, but it really is a shame that it got tainted like this right before wrapping up. I mean, what a weird choice.
That's so... Okay, you know what?
Do anyway. Not know.
A question I have had about many situations is this. The only person in the entire world who could have played that role?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what we're saying here?
Right.
Thank you for bringing up the book and the coverage. And actually, it took a few weeks of very public coverage of that interview that I did with Jeff Garlin. And then if I told you the tornado of my life in the period of time before that interview went live, and then after, a lot of communications were happening. And I like, to this day, the studio behind the Goldbergs has a philosophy of dealing with the journalists that I genuinely will never understand, at least for that show. I don't know. It's weird to me that, again, like, I think that there are a lot, this is something I go into in the book, if I may just quickly say this, there are many people who can do every single job in Hollywood. If you had said, are there a number of actors in the correct age range who would like to play, a perhaps middle-aged person having a flirtation and or romance with, you know, the grandma on an acclaimed show? Sure. I would imagine any casting director of any repute can come up with a list of hundreds of names of people who could play that role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not even my deal, as I go into in the book, to say, well, here's, the book is not 400 pages of names of, these are people who should never work again.
Right.
What are the amends that these people made and the reforms that we can document and that have been monitored to ensure that everyone that they work with is treated professionally, and if not treated professionally and appropriately, do they all have recourse that keeps them safe and, you know, corrects whatever is going awry? So that's really my question. Is, you know, like, it's funny because I've been doing a lot of press for the book. It's like, well, so what if we're like canceling and the blah, blah, blah. I don't know what that is. It's not a real thing.
Yeah.
My translation of the word cancel is, in this Hollywood context, is someone with access, money, power, connections, or all those things has a temporary reputational setback amongst the small subgroup of people who are aware of this transgression that became public, or series of transgressions.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah.
That's all that happens. My whole stance is with the book, and which is sort of like in my reporting, is I don't weaponize somebody's terrible day. I don't do that. I've never done that. This is patterns of behavior. And I do feel some type of way about all of this with this particular person, because I did the interview. I appreciate that Jeff Garlin got on the phone with me and we talked about and grappled with these topics together. Some things that he said to me, I found problematic or questionable, or, you know, some was okay, or, you know, it was just a range of things were talked about. We worked very hard to present a representative sample of that conversation. He thought that the people who had gone to HR, those names should be shared with him.
Right.
I think that those protections are there for a reason.
Yeah.
And really what tips me into the negative for this part of what we're talking about is that, oh, well, he said, oh, well, everyone on the film I directed thought I, you know, was great. And, you know, the crew on the Goldbergs uniformly thinks I'm really great and wonderful and we get along great. And actually that led to quite a bit of what ended up in my inbox, is that the crew did not sign off on that version.
Yeah.
They were not,
different,
you know, they had not been briefed that was the talking point, and that they did not agree with it. So, and also, you know, by that point, and even before the story went live, I'd spoken to people from Curb, but then in the book I was able to put, I have spoken to people who worked or work on Curb Your Enthusiasm or have knowledge of events there, where, again, what occurred on the Goldberg set, it's not like he went over to the Curb set and was acting completely, you know, differently and fully appropriately at all times. So, like, it's just this whole thing of, like,
why are we working so hard to keep this person in the mix when they have not made amends, when they have not attempted to remediate the situation with the people who suffered in a situation where they were the one that caused the problem? Why is the effort there so strenuously to give them a gig when a lot of people don't have any gig? They could use the check. They don't have a track record of mistreating or behaving unprofessionally.
Yeah.
And that's where I still have a glitch in my brain. And it probably always will.
Sounds like Jeff Garland needs to put out some NFTs of him with like ripped bodies and Superman and fucking striding a rocket and shit. Problem solved.
Well, speaking of weird choices being made, last week I also watched Based on a True Story, the new Peacock show, and I reviewed it for crack.com. And you can find a link to that in the show notes.
All right, Mo, what have you been watching recently on TV?
I will never call HBO Max Max. That's just a personal announcement I'd like to make. But on the service otherwise known as HBO Max, not only is there an interesting new Donna Summer documentary, I thought it could have been better, but clearly it was one of those things made with the agreement of the estate and her her family, which, okay, so those things are what they are. A better example of that, I think, and one that's really relevant, is Tina on HBO Max. I watch almost every music documentary that has ever been made. And this one is one where I feel like, you know, Tina Turner is just, she passed and she's an iconic figure. That word gets overused, but she truly, across many generations, incredibly influential. The film of her life was incredibly influential. You know, there's just so many ways in which she changed the pop culture and music landscapes. And Tina was made with her, you know, access to her teams and her people and her life. It was obviously she was one of the movers behind it. And I think it uses that access really well to allow her to control her narrative, which, talk about someone who didn't have that agency for a lot of her life. And there's a new article by Soraya Nadia McDonald. I believe Antscape is the site, but look for Soraya Nadia McDonald on your socials. She's an amazing critic. She wrote a long piece about what we're leaving out when we talk about Tina Turner and the factors of race, gender, American history, and so forth that sort of affected who she could be. I think her thesis was, we cannot just look at her as this feel-good figure who overcame the bad stuff. Like, why did the bad stuff exist and how much of it is still around and still foundational?
Right.
That's something I'm really interested in. Like, what, let's not just boil a story down to the feel good essence of it. Let's actually dig into why did this happen and what are the factors that still allows this to happen. And I really think with Tina Turner, something that really struck home for me was Tina is extremely canny about the narrative around Tina Turner and how, in a way, she could not escape the brave thing that she did. In the 80s, she went public with People magazine to say that she was the survivor of prolonged, severe, life-threatening abuse from Ike Turner. The controlling and the abuse and the physical and the mental torture, really, were just off the scale, really bad. You know, and how she rebuilt her life and, you know, rebuilt her career when everyone had written her off. You know, the documentary goes into all of that. But then that became the only thing that she got asked about. And I have to say, there's someone who could listen to this podcast and say, you know, Mo Ryan, noted hypocrite, you know, because I ask people about their trauma. I do. You know, I call myself the anti-clause because I come to you once a year and ask you about the worst things that ever happened to you. It's not great. I got to get a better costume too. So it's a really interesting question, but I think that when you reduce someone down to the talking points, the briefest possible condensed version of their story, what that means for the person being asked the questions and being interviewed, a public figure like Tina Turner, they get asked the same shit over and over again. What that does is put you in a different constricting situation. I mean, obviously she got away from Ike. She achieved all the success. And, you know, what's her approach to vocals? You know, like, who influenced her as a dancer or performer. What's it like to do a, you know, 2-hour concert at Wembley Stadium? Like who does she consider her peers? Who influenced her as a musical artist? Like all of those things, people don't want to just be reduced to being defined by their trauma. And the media did it really, you know, the media now is like, oh, she's so iconic. Ooh, we really miss Tina Turner and okay, but she's a lot of things and reducing her down to just that. First of all, just reducing it to like, there was a triumph over adversity. That's leaving out a lot.
Yeah.
You could see, they actually had clips. You could see the frustration on her face, you know, 10 years after going public about the abuse, 15 years after, she keeps being grilled about it in a sort of voyeuristic way. Like, tell us this, you know, like we're, yeah, you know, on a chat show somewhere. And it's like, that becomes insulting. But, you know, Tina Turner was a Black woman in America. Can she say, this is really insulting and degrading and it's making me annoyed, if not angry? Like, she can't say that.
Yeah.
You know, that was like not allowed. I thought that the documentary was good. It goes through the expected story beats that you'd expect, that you're waiting for and you kind of know are coming. But it also, I thought, was like kind of like a piece of media criticism from the target of extreme media interest for a long time. When is enough enough?
Yeah.
And, you know, actually there's a person, I won't name names, but there's a person who was asked, a public figure, you know, a name that if you watch TV, you've heard of, would get asked about X a lot. And I said, you know, you can be done. I personally think is just someone who knows you as a creative artist. You know, when we were talking off the record, I think at a certain point you get to say, I'm not talking about this anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and if someone says that to me, I'm like, cool, cool, cool. Like, I don't coerce people.
Yeah.
People who don't want to revisit bad stuff that happened to them with me, I'm like, you know, go with God. That's fine. We don't, you know, that's okay. But we got to think about, as people who write about the media, like constantly throwing that stuff back at people's faces and the effect that it can have. And I'm really glad. I think my closing thought will be a positive one about Tina. She met this German executive who seemed lovely. She had a beautiful series of expensive homes in incredible European locations.
She sure did.
Yep.
And I love that for her. Mm-hmm. I really do. Like, I'm like, there's no amount of awesome things happening to and for Tina Turner. There's no limit on that amount. I wanted her to live another 20 years just having a great time. And, you know, but she gave us a lot. So
she really did.
Grateful.
Yeah.
All right, your plugs. You are at Mo Ryan on Twitter, and I believe you have a book out.
Do I? Oh, God. You know, I meant to bring that up. Yeah, no, I did. I did put out a book recently, mm-hmm, and I'm really happy with the response to it. And some people on this podcast helped it be better, more better. It's my first book. My advice to people contemplating writing a book, don't. You will cry and it'll be hard and like sit back on your couch.
Yeah, Tara and I do it together. Like, bring a buddy.
The way I've been describing it to people is it's like jumping off 2,000 cliffs at once. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a control freak, that is like a party. You know, I'm a control freak a little bit.
Well, people are already posting their copies on our Discord, but for those who have not yet gotten mm-hmm theirs, yeah, we will link it in the show notes so they can mm-hmm pick it up.
Yeah. And so it's the short pitch of it is that, you know, Hollywood has mistaken identifying problems with actually fixing them for a very long time. I got the vibe a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, that people were tired of abuse narratives or the dynamics of oppression and exploitation that often exist in Hollywood and the sort of like the people who benefit from all these, you know, kind of toxic institutions and or systems. And I'm like, well, wait, people are sick of it, but we didn't fix it. So like, that feels bad. Like, I know that there's a certain amount of fatigue that sets in. I personally identify with it. But so I wanted to talk about the bigger picture. I do get into the weeds with some specific individual, but I also wanted to say, we can't only stay in the weeds with individuals. We got to make it about the forces and the institutions and the enablers that allow this to keep happening and almost sort of foreordain that this will keep happening. But I also talked to a lot of people who are doing good stuff to make things better. And the reason that I believe that it's possible to have hope for Hollywood is because I've seen I've seen people do it. Like, I've watched them in the trenches and talked to them about making better norms, and it's possible. So that's my pitch.
Burn it down. Get it everywhere.
Yeah.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Well, this is not going to make anything better. It's The Real Housewives of New Jersey. I have been meaning for some years now to start watching only the reunion, since A, it's usually three episodes, which is like 20 to 25% of a season in and of itself, and B, they're that long because all of the fights from the season get rehashed with receipts shown in order to kick off the next season. So there's really no need to sit through the season proper. You get all the lowlights at the end. Everybody's all dressed up and very sparkly, and you could skip all the filler with the super contrived party planning and the people's kids being Heisenberg effect jackwagons, so on and so forth. Bravo made the fireworks factory its own thing, labeled it clearly. Why not just go straight there? So I did. I got behind on season 13 of our HONJ months ago, never found the time, or will, let's face it, to catch up. So the other day I was like, let's try out this catch-up strat. We're two episodes into the three-episode reunion set, and I recommend it. Solid strat. Mm-hmm. If you want to know what's going on with a given franchise, but you can't see giving up, like, literally 18 hours of your life during the season, this is the way, especially with this particular strain, virulent strain of Housewives, because Teresa Giudice, or whatever married name she's going by now, is this is a very close analog to Donald Trump. She is, on the face of it, a complete moron, but with a preternatural lizard brain savvy about getting attention and keeping it on herself. Does not discriminate between negative and positive attention. Leverages negative attention into victimhood as well. She is allergic to shame or accountability. She is a petty, vengeful hypocrite, which, okay, let's face it, somewhat relatable. And her appeal to a certain segment of the public is both baffling and undeniable. Like, whether we like it or not, Trump is the Republican Party of 2023. And like it or not, Tree is the Real Housewives of New Jersey. You could kick her off, I guess, but then who would watch it? Even if it's hate watching, it's still watching. In both of these cases, limiting one's intake of this public figure is probably best for the sanity for a number of reasons. I will mention one key difference, which is that she has recently gone, she like got rid of her extensions, I think because her wedding hair required literally 1,500 bobby pins.
I read about that.
And she probably had to be cut out of it with the jaws of life, which Jersey gonna Jersey, bless. But she has a lob now and it looks really good, so... unlike Orangino. But the real fireworks, which we have mentioned in passing around here recently on this very podcast, because Andy Cohen was somehow getting clocked for screaming at Teresa and her husband instead of given a congressional commendation for his restraint and not slapping her to death. Anywho, all of that is in part three of this season's reunion, which is airing, as you are listening to this, tonight, Wednesday. But if you're like, oh, I haven't followed this season, well, I mean, what is there to follow? It's people with extremely elaborate fingernails screeching at each other. I didn't follow it either. You're fine. Grab some popcorn. Join the fun. I would love to talk to you about it on our Discord if you're a Patreon supporter. Speaking of Patreon support, our Patreon supporters at Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs have been crucial in helping us determine our top 40 for the First Name Basis season, which is now underway. First Name Basis, we are trying to select what is the most iconic pop song containing a name. Unfortunately, my name is definitely still in the mix, even though they didn't spell it correctly, Jefferson Starship. Anyway, you can find all of that at patreon.com/masthas if you would like to vote. If you just want to follow along, we're at Talk Songs on Twitter, and Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is wherever you get podcasts.
All right, Strange New Worlds is back. The first episode, very fun Spock-centric adventure. Pike is barely in it. Weird choice for a first episode of the season, but it works. Second episode involves a court scene. I just want to say everyone is in dress uniforms and everybody has these crazy, ugly badges. And I swear to God, they look like melted crayon art, you know, when you used to stick those fake stained glass frames in the oven and you would put melt stuff there. They look like that, except they all have them. And I thought that was the most ridiculous thing ever. So I went on Discord to share.
They were shrinky dinks. They sort of were.
Yeah. I have seen all six episodes that they sent preview. Yeah.
So, okay. So these badges, it turns out the badges are basically just medals for doing this and that, but they look like daycare projects.
Officially they are. Yeah.
Okay. But if I was in Starfleet and people wanted to give me recognition for my accomplishments, I'd be like, okay, yes, recognize me. Not like that.
Yeah, say it with cash. Say it with space credits.
Right.
The third episode is definitely my favorite of the ones I've watched so far, and I haven't got to all six yet. The third episode has a shitload of CanCon Canadian content to be found within it. I won't spoil anything that happens, but there's a natural mystery, and there is a shocking revelation at the end, which I was not ready for. The fourth episode, kind of a classic sci-fi short story sort of concept, what sort of society grows out of a place where people have no real memories of what happened before, kind of stuff you would see in a sci-fi magazine back in the day. Some actors do better with the work than others in that episode, but, you know, it worked.
Yeah.
I know everyone's looking forward to the Lower Decks crossover episode, so as a piece of service journalism, I will let you know that is episode 7, the one after they gave to all the critics. So
yes, of course.
Is why nobody's talking about it, because we haven't seen it yet.
Yes, we should clarify. We did get screeners, as Dave said, and the season premieres on the 15th.
For my money, the fifth episode, gold.
Oh, yeah?
From start to finish. Absolute, total gold. And also, Space Winona Earp is in this show. Mm-hmm. There's more Space Winona Earp. And again, like, my critique of any show is like, are you taking my favorite actors and putting them in space? We talked about Winona Earp. I think, Melanie Scrofano, put her in all of the things. Make her a pirate, put her in space, put her in a Western where she's killing demons. Mm-hmm. She can do it all. She has the range. But yeah, episode 5, in terms of Star Trek Strange New Worlds doing light comedy shenanigans within the world of Star Trek, absolutely top shelf.
Nice. All right. Well, that's the next watch. So I'll report back on that soon.
Right.
Thank you, Mo. And coming up soon on the Extra Hot Great Cinematic Universe this Friday on Extra, Extra Hot Great, available to club members, it is Project Runway All-Stars. It is back. And I politely listened to Tara and Sarah talk about it for a while and chime in with something to stony silence.
We acknowledge your sacrifice.
There is also Ask EHG, Not Quite Winners and Losers of the Week, a whole bunch of 15 seconds of fame, maybe a special guest appearance in there by someone, and we'll discuss what TV character needs a robot car in their lives. Mm-hmm. We have opinions. And then right here next week on EHG Prime, we're talking of everybody's favorite pig fucking show, Black Mirror. Brandy Brown is back for that one. Don't miss it.
Definitely the best one since Council of Dads went off the air.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week, it is Tara Ariano.
Hello. Reservation Dogs is one of those shows that is so singular and so perfectly realized that its very existence feels like a miracle. It's the story of four Indigenous teenagers on a reservation in Oklahoma who are, along with their community, trying to understand why their fifth gang brother, Daniel, died by suicide before the start of the series. And yes, it is a comedy, the really funny kind. I promise. In its first two seasons, Reservation Dogs has aired a lot of remarkable episodes. The series premiere, with its foundational Flaming Flamers truck heist. The episode we spend entirely at the Indian Health Services Clinic, getting to know the unhinged town doctor and various patients passing through the waiting room. The episode where Bear gets a job on a roofing crew and connects with Daniel's father in a deeper way than they ever have before. But today I want to talk about the one where the gang's least chatty member gets a showcase. Here's why I believe Season 2, Episode 7, Stay Gold, Cheesy Boy, deserves induction into the canon. Number one, it effortlessly creates a whole new setting that feels like it's been here the whole time. Cheese and his Uncle Charlie are on the lawn eating Flaming Flamers and bullshitting about Uncle Charlie's thriving TikTok account, now 20 followers strong, when a shitload of cops pull up, smash in the front door, which was open, as Cheese tells them, with bemused annoyance, remove a few weed plants, and arrest Uncle Charlie, whose farewell to Cheese gives the episode its title. After the cold open, we find out where Cheese has ended up. He is in a group home for juvenile offenders, even though he isn't one. While elder resident Julio, Reynaldo Piniella, painstakingly irons his work clothes next to them, house manager Gene gives Cheese his orientation speech. Clip one.
All right, Chester, let me give you the rundown.
Cheese.
Excuse me?
Cheese.
Cheese? You missed dinner.
No, it's what everyone calls me.
Oh, is it? Let's get something straight. I'm not one of your thuggy-ass little friends. Do you understand? I represent the law. And in this house, I am the judge, jury, and executioner. I'll call you by your legal name, or I'll call you dummy, or I'll call you dipshit, or shit-ass. Whatever the mood moves me to call you, I'll call you that. Got it? You Native American?
Yeah.
I know a lot of Native Americans. They're good people. They saved my life.
Cool.
Okay, daily chores. These rotate on a weekly basis. You're the new guy, you clean the commode. You know what the commode is?
Bathroom?
Yes, Julio. New guy knows what a commode is.
If that voice sounds familiar, it's because you heard it in my last canon presentation. Gene is played by Glow's own Marc Maron. And as we learn almost immediately, cleaning the commode is a hazing so brutal, it should be illegal. I can't clip it, but the faint shock Cheese registers as he tries to understand how poop got smeared on the door frame is a great example of the kind of underplaying Lane Factor brings to the character. Cheese's first introduction to his roommate Tino, played by Travis Thompson, is when Tino smashes into the freshly cleaned bathroom, spraying pee everywhere. Clip two.
Excuse me, Brent. Man, I almost ain't make it, Brent. Hey, appreciate you, Brent.
Don't mention it.
He was really dehydrated.
When Cheese and Tino meet up again the next day, after a middle-of-the-night soap sock beating, Cheese declines to join, and a very chintzy breakfast, Tino opens up. Clip three.
Tino.
Cheese. Pronouns are he, him, and his.
Oh, you're gay, huh? That's cool. My cousin buying shit.
I think you're supposed to say queer.
Hey, man, I'm just trying to let you know that I don't got a problem with no queers.
Gender identity and sexuality are two different things. Anyway, how old's your son?
Fuck. I want to say he's like four now. I don't get to see him much since I'm in here, but luckily, his grandma sent me pictures sometimes.
Oh, they're pretty cute, huh?
Yeah.
I stay with my grandma too sometimes.
You blessed, bro. Old ladies hold shit down. Pretty much all my kids with their grandmas.
Kids? Like, plural?
Plural? Nah, they mostly native.
Tino is going to age out soon, so he wants to get a job and help his children's grandmothers, but he's not allowed to go look for a job as long as he is in Gene's care at the house. Julio is only permitted because he has lived there so long that Gene is more permissive with him. Julio is not, however, too busy with that job to use the mandatory house meeting to raise grievances. Clip four.
Tino.
Hmm.
What's wrong with your bicho?
Fuck, you just call me?
Every time I walk in the bathroom, there's nothing but pee everywhere.
What, you have no aim?
Oh, maybe you got nothing down there, so it just sprays all over the floor. This seat, the fucking roof.
You're a fucking snitch, Leo.
Oh, I'm a snitch?
Yeah.
I walk in the bathroom wearing my socks. Guess what I'm stepping in? Your fucking pee.
All right, we get it. We get it.
After resident Jethro is arrested in the middle of the night, Gene relaxes the rules for a healing snack. Tino and Julio fantasize about all the shit they're going to talk if they get arrested again, but Cheese has a different approach. Clip five.
I try to stay on their good side. Maybe they'll think I didn't do anything wrong.
Bullshit. That's being a coward, bro.
No, seriously. A while back, my friends and I, we stole a chip truck. We stole it right in front of a gas station. We stole some meth heads.
Damn. That's hard, though.
Then I convinced the cop I was investigating us to take me on a ride along. I told him it was a school project.
Hell no.
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Like Don Corleone in these streets.
Yeah, except I don't have any kids, and I'm more like a Tom Hagen.
Hmm. Well, I guess I'm the Don. I just hope all my kids don't turn out to be Fredos.
I knew you for 2 years. You never told me you had kids.
Yeah, well, we don't talk much. That's why I'm always asking you to hook me up at your job. A native trying to change his ways. I can't have my kids growing up like I did.
It's a moment that feels like it would not have happened if Cheese were not there. The conversation goes on. Clip six.
I'm sorry, man. I always thought you were just fucking with me. There's so many people that come and go here. Sometimes I think it's better to just be alone. You get to know somebody and they go get arrested or something. Then you never see them again.
I think it's okay to guard your feelings with barriers, Julio, but I hope that one day you can have a healthy relationship with people without fear of losing them.
Why the fuck you talk like that?
Talk like what?
Like you reading from a white girl's Instagram.
Oh, hey, queer.
I had a friend, Daniel. He was like my hero. But then he died. Well, he ended his own life. And I read about some reasons why he might have did it, and it's just hard for people. I just thought that maybe if I treated others the way they wanted to be treated, they would do the same, eventually.
I'm sorry about your homie, bro. It's hard out here for people. I get it.
You're a good man, Cheese.
Lights out, shit asses.
It's such a pivotal moment for all three characters that when Cheese comes down the next day in a wrinkled Sade t-shirt, Julio, appalled that Cheese would disrespect the queen like that, takes Cheese aside for an act of service, an ironing lesson. Clip 7.
Oh, whoa. You're gonna fuck up the whole shirt. Ease into it. Take your time, like a good Sade song. Yeah, that's it. See, now you're ready to get everybody pregnant with your looks. Yeah.
A few years ago, when I pitched the Jackie Daytona episode of What We Do in the Shadows, I talked about the Railton residents' obsession with girls' volleyball and unquestioning embrace of Jackie as an extended gag about the classic sitcom tradition of a backdoor pilot, dropping a character into a setting so elaborately self-conscious that you know you're supposed to want to see more of it. In the wrong hands, the group home in Stay Gold, Cheesy Boy, could have been just as corny, but not as a bit, like in What We Do in the Shadows, giving each resident a scene to tell his backstory and have his life touched by Cheese's gentle goodness. But in this version, brought to us in the right hands, there's no strain to make us feel any of these people will still be in each other's lives once the state no longer requires it, or that the experience left more of a mark on any of them than the sketches in Cheese's notebook. The group home scenes are all the more effective for how understated they are, much like the character of Cheese himself. Number 2 shows us what chosen family means. Willie Jack has parents. Alora Dannon has aunties and, until this season, had a grandma. Bear has a mom and a trifling dad. Even Daniel still has a dad. Cheese's biological family situation is less clear, but he doesn't seem bothered about that. His closest friends and their families seem to have always formed a network of support for him, but that didn't stop him adding a grandma when he met Irene at the IHS back in season 1. When he ends up at the group home, she's the one he most wants to reach so that she won't worry when she doesn't see him. Unbeknownst to Cheese, however, Jackie, historically an enemy to our titular reservation dogs, though those lines started to blur at the end of season 1, happened to be riding by on her bike during the raid and saw both Uncle Charlie and Cheese getting arrested. She tells Bear and Willie Jack. They hit up Alora Dannon, who's been keeping to herself since her grandmother's death. A sketchy plan is hatched. Clip 8.
Yeah, can I help you?
Hey, I'm here to pick up Cheese.
Who?
Chester. I'm his auntie.
How old are you?
What's that matter?
You don't look old enough to be Chester's auntie.
Indian ways. I got a niece who's 58 years old.
Right. Well, look, even if I did believe you, he's in our custody until the court says otherwise.
Well,
so
he's pretty much been in my care for the past 2 years.
And he ended up here. Wow. Good job.
Alora Dannon doesn't need to create a distraction because Cheese wisely refuses Bear, Jackie, and Willie Jack's exhortations for him to sneak out the upstairs window. He does accept Julio's loan of a secret phone so he can call Irene, though he doesn't tell her where he is or burden her with a request for help. But he doesn't need to because his network of support works it out off-screen. Tribal cop Big, Zach McLaren, comes to the group home to retrieve Cheese. Clip 9.
Sorry, but gotta put these handcuffs on you. Stand up. Turn around. Hold on.
Mind if I talk shit while you do it?
Fine. Just don't make it too personal.
All right. This guy's a child molester!
Ah, Jesus, fuck. Fucking shit ass. Quit now.
Thank you.
Big tells Cheese he's taking him to his next placement at Irene's house, where she's waiting on the lawn with his friends in hand-stamped Free Cheese t-shirts. Big's probably not in a rush to get Cheese to an official foster parent or to track down any biological relatives who might be around. Big has pretty clearly now jumped himself into Cheese's extended family and is treating Cheese the way Cheese would want to be treated, as Cheese mused the night before. The guys at the group home might get their way sometimes by acting hard. Cheese, by contrast, is just his sweet self all the time and thus has escaped the group home thanks to all the disparate people who have united in loving him. Cheese never says in this episode whether he is queer, but the intrinsically queer concept of chosen family is very real for him. By the way, happy Pride. Number three, it is so funny. Here are some of the jokes I haven't already mentioned. The first night, Cheese is awakened by the guys beating James the phone monopolizer with soap bars and socks. Cheese declines Tino's proffered soap sock, saying he will just cheer them on from the sidelines and promises he won't snitch. Tino says he knows Cheese won't, smooching his fingers and tapping Cheese on the forehead with them. Whether the gesture is in the script or an ad-lib by Thompson, it is brilliant. There's also Bear the roofer telling Cheese to jump into his arms because he has upper body strength now. There's the phone alcove decorated with an oil painting of Gene. There's Jethro getting dragged out while unfavorably comparing Gene to the star of K-Pax and House of Cards. Honestly, though, everything Gene says and does hits for me. Let's hear his step five share, clip 10.
When I was a young little shit ass like you guys, about your age, my life was in shambles. I was a drunk drug addict. I was an abuser. I was a thief. There wasn't anything I didn't smoke or snort or drink or fuck even. And then I hit a wall. I hit my bottom. About 3 days into a bad bender, finally made my way back home, walk into my house, and in my bedroom, I found my wife, two midgets, and a DJ, AM radio DJ. Pretty popular. I didn't like him even before he fucked my wife, but it doesn't matter. I just lost my mind. I literally lost my mind, and I chased those midgets out of my house. Naked midgets, running out into the street. And I went back in. I was going to kill that DJ. I was going to kill him with my own hands. But he was big. He just kicked my ass. I think he's still with my wife. It doesn't matter. Threw me out of my own house, and I just wandered into the woods. But that's where I met the Lakota medicine man. Walking Monty. Picked me up by the scruff, showed me the ways, changed my life. Very grateful. I'm a better man now. I'm even kind of friendly with one of the midgets. These things can happen when you're sober. Yeah.
Reservation Dogs is a special, wonderful, very funny show. Cheese is its least showy, most lovable character, and this episode brought us a deeper understanding of who he is and what he's about. Stay gold and induct it into the canon.
Thank you, Tara. Mo, do you want to take first crack at the canon presentation and the episode itself?
I was reliving every moment. I loved it again. It's just like it does not get old. And it's like just to, because I'm a pro, I'm going to circle back and bring in the Full Monty, which is, you know, that's a show that's trying to do this.
Yep.
Yes.
And what yes. nobody wants is a show that's like, here are social issues, problems. The end, it's like, oh yeah. And I do think that, like, again, because of the performers we talked about with the Full Monty, it's like they really know how to work with the material. But Reservation Dogs is really one of the reigning champs at what I call the stealth show. House was a stealth show because it was an ethics seminar masquerading as a weekly procedural. You could sit there and list what Reservation Dogs is about. Is it about growing up, found families, feeling out of place, but having your crew that understands you and has your back? Is it about being a Native teen? Is it about living on the reservation? Is it about trying to, whatever your circumstances are, trying to get out and make something of yourself? But then who are you if you actually manage that? And who would you be and how scary that can be? And also, you know, like the big overriding theme is their friend died by suicide. Like a lesser show would have made it a, like from jump overtly about that. They really lead you in there very gently. And I think it's because, you know, it's kind of like I was talking about with Itina, the creator, co-creator and showrunner Sterling Harjo no community wants to be flattened to the worst things that have happened to it. Yes, mm-hmm. those are touchstones within our community, but there's more. There's so, these people are funny, they're human, they're multidimensional. And this episode is such a great example of something that so many shows do poorly or just do okay. You take one character and just 90% of the running time is them plopped down with an entirely new group of people that you've not met. And if you have built up an affection for the characters, you are like, wait, go back to the people I know. This is bad. But instantly, Marc Maron fits in. He says shit ass a lot. So that's like 80% of it. Instantly, they're so good at casting. They're so good at creating the sets and the environments and the writing that you instantly buy that this is a thing that would happen. And again, American history is one of the state enacting terrible things on Native people. And so here's a young man put in this group home for doing nothing, sitting on a lawn chair. That's all he literally did nothing. But Lane Factor is so good. It's so funny. It's so diversionary. Everyone gets to be a human being. You know, I love that. It's not ignoring the really shitty dynamics that got Cheese into this situation, but it's much more about how does he respond to it. I absolutely loved the episode. I personally, if it was me doing the canon pitch, it would be Offerings, which is two episodes later. And a lot of people are going to know soon what other people have known for some time, that Lily Gladstone is like, will destroy you, like as a performer. Lily Gladstone, who's in Close of a Flower Moon, unbelievably effective actor, and a showcase for another member of the cast, because it's really a lot of it is like a couple of characters kind of forming a connection. But I think I would definitely vote yes on this, and I would die for Cheese.
Yeah.
I would take a bullet for this kid.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this is a great point just to jump in before we pass it on. But like the, you know, state violence against this community that's also what makes Gene so funny as a character, because I mean, I couldn't get into this in my pitch. I had so many clips already, but he thinks he's one of the good guys, and all the stuff about like the Lakota medicine man who saved my life, and you know, speaking to Cheese in Lakota after he's left, and Cheese is like, I don't even know what that means. That he's like such a cartoon in his way as well. Like that's a satiric way of taking this on. And I did have stuff in my notes about like, this is what this Reservation Dogs does right that the full Monty did wrong. But I felt like I had already shit on that too much. So I just on the fly cut that part out.
I decided to help you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mo. Sarah, what do you think?
I was about to make all of those points. I just kept thinking as we were hearing them sort of, or talking about them like eating chips and sipping on their no brand Capri Suns while listening to Cypress Hill, that it's like, this is the, you know, eating a sandwich part, that you're actually seeing the sort of full breadth of this experience and getting a real lived in sense from it, which it's not that Full Monty doesn't do that. It's just like only the minor chord stuff. This is extremely funny and also sort of grim sometimes at the same time. And like, if I had to distill this pitch down to one moment, it's one that you can't really clip, which is following Cheese's eyes as he's following the like shit stains up like towards the ceiling. And it's just like, oh my God. I mean,
And jerking his head when he sees more, like a jump scare. There's still more that he didn't notice at first.
And then he gets peed on and he's just doing this like perfectly natural bit of business at the side of the shot. And then, but that he also like peeks into the toilet and is like, he was really dehydrated. Like almost marveling in this positive, like, you know, but science way. And then like flushes and he has little like flowered gloves on. I mean, it's just like it's just so well observed, which is like such a sort of flat nothing burger thing to say. But the fact that you get all of it and that they let the audience hold all of these things in our heads about these people in this community at the same time is like, thank you, finally, because Full Monty sort of felt like, well, you know, you only get to see this like bleak, there's, you know, the sun never really comes out here part of it. But this is really funny. This has an excellent sense of its own rhythms, unlike Full Monty. And I guess we should just stop comparing it because it should, you know, it's its own thing. Mm-hmm. But I definitely wanted to keep watching. This has been on my list for a while. There's so many moments like where the kids are just like exchanging looks. Like a lot of this episode's appeal is moments that Tara couldn't clip, but the things that she clipped, like I always make little check marks if I noted them, and then they come up in the presentation and almost everything is checked off, except Marin's exhausted. Once again, everyone has failed to engage with the step, which just, and then the kids' reactions to him and just him being like, enjoy the strange orange drink. I didn't read the label or it had no label on it. Just the way that so many things in this episode don't have labels on them, but then the things that do, that's sort of an interesting sort of leitmotif in it. Anyway, this was a fantastically enjoyable half hour of TV. Excellent presentation. And I look forward to moving this up the list. Dave, take us home.
All right. Everybody pretty much said everything that was on my things to sound smart about. Obviously, it was kismet that we managed to arrange the full Monty and this episode of this show on the same episode for our compare and contrast essays. I really don't have anything to add. The one thing, no, I don't think anybody mentioned yet, I had to take a quick exit to deal with some UPS stuff during some of the talk, but my favorite little moment was Cheese whispering to Big, can I shit talk you? I just really loved that little part. What I liked about the episode is beyond just like the character study of Cheese was that at the end of it, you realize like Cheese would be so good at Mark Maron's job.
Yes!
Like he would
be role,
right? And he would be so empathetic and so caring and so, you know, learning by experience.
I am not a crackpot. Characters named Cheese, like you start at a B plus. At least for me.
Yeah.
Solid agree. Yes.
All right. Let's put this to the official vote. Mo Ryan, this episode canon worthy or nay?
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Without further fuckery, yes.
I'm going to say yes too. So. That means Reservation Dogs, Season 2, Episode 7, Stay Gold, Cheesy Boy. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
I mean, I guess you have to take this with a grain of salt because every person in any field who is elaborately praised is probably just about to be outed as the worst person alive. But for now, this is a positive story. A crew member on Barry anonymously let a reporter from The Verge named Amrita Khalid know that Bill Hader is great, that he's...
This just in. Power sauce is awesome.
Like, if Mo's book tells us, this actually is breaking news that it's unusual in the industry because this anonymous crew member was like, he's very respectful of the crew. He tries to keep our time as short as possible. It's the shortest hours I've ever worked in my whole career. He knows who everyone is on the crew, what their job is, who to talk for. Like, he's just great. So, I mean, stand by 3, 2, 1 for us to find out something awful about Barry, but Bill Hader rather. But for today, he's a good dude. Mm-hmm.
Until we do the anagram work, we find out that person's name. Once we solve the anagram, is Bill Hader. Yep. And loser of the week?
Loser of the week is The Crowded Room, which made Tom Holland, who plays the lead, take a year off from acting because being in it was so taxing and basically gave him a breakdown, come to Jesus.
You have to act near other people? Like,
yeah.
It's like a subway, acting in a subway car.
Mm-hmm. So crowded.
I mean, they're like the idea, I think, also is that they're all... and then the follow-up.
That's good podcasting.
Yeah.
They're all silence.
They're in his head.
Yes.
They're in his head. But yeah, the punchline is that now there's all these follow-up headlines that are like, he didn't say that because the reviews are terrible, but the reviews are terrible.
They really are.
Well, so, speaking about having a lot of things in your heads, but not getting any answers, do you know what time it is?
It's
game time. All right, everybody, welcome back to Game Time after Sarah's victory last week. The standings are Tara with 4. She can still clinch it today. Sarah with 1. Value guest still looking to get on the board, Mo. So time to represent. Today we are playing another round of 19 questions. This is 19 questions Burn It Down edition.
Woo!
This is how it's going to work. Uh-oh. Y'all know 19 questions. It's like 10, 20 questions, except we took one off and now we trademarked it. Yes. We didn't. We don't have that kind of money, guys.
No.
The only difference this week is that all the shows are ones that were mentioned in Mo's book, Burn It Down. We'll just get right into it. This is how it works. If you don't remember, our three contestants will take guesses. They will ask me yes or no questions. I will answer them. If they get a yes, they continue asking questions. If they get a no, it continues to the next person. So let's just get right into it and see who is going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, order's going to be Sarah, Tara, Mo. So if you hear a no, feel free just to ask your next question. We'll go until the correct answer is guessed. So item number one, Sarah, it is a character. Now keep in mind, the TV show is something mentioned in Burn It Down. This one comes from Amanda at EHGSS.
Is this character a human character?
Oh.
It's both, I can say to you.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you another crack at it because we had a yes there.
Is this character alive in our timeline?
Oh,
another
no!
doer. Wow, we're off wow. to a weird start. Okay.
Is it the Headless Horseman? Fuck's sake.
Oh, that's
it
a good guess.
It's not the Headless Horseman, so we go to Tara.
Okay. Is it a character from a drama?
I'm going to say yes to that.
Okay. Is it a network drama?
It's not. To Mo.
Is it a character from a streaming drama?
Yes.
Okay. Is this character's gender male?
Okay.
I'm going to add a little color here just, you know, to save a lot of questions. Presented on the show.
Okay.
Male.
Okay. Who wrote this book again? I'm unclear.
Oh, it's
like,
Mo
I
Ryan.
I should probably refer to it. I should have looked at it.
She's been on a lot of radio station interviews recently. She's getting really
That's
forgetful.
That's not a yes or no question.
Okay. All right. Presented on the show as an streaming drama as male. I should know this.
Kind of human, kind of alive.
Okay. Was this a character on a show on HBO or HBO Max or anything HBO Max-ish universe? The HBO Max?
Okay.
No. Okay. No HBO Max involvement.
Damn it. Okay.
Was this a show on Netflix?
Okay. Was it a show on Peacock? Why would it be Peacock?
On Hulu.
Is this character American?
Was this on Paramount Plus, aka CBS All Access?
Christ.
Was this? I don't know what to ask anymore. Oh, was this a Prime Video program? Amazon Prime.
Damn. There went my next.
I had one more.
Everyone's last streaming service.
Okay. No. Is this character a robot?
Is this Good character guess. On Apple TV Plus? Okay. Ugh. A drama on Apple TV Plus. Is this related to The Morning Show? Shit.
Timo.
Is this a character on the television program For All Mankind, which I don't mention in my book?
No, you don't. I was going to say, it wasn't in your book.
I just got so excited that it could be fam that I really overshot the target. Yep. Sorry, but go ahead.
All right, just there.
I think we're out of, are we out of questions?
We keep going. It's 19 questions. It's just the title of it. We've gone a billion questions before. Right now, Dr. Calhoun is in Discord typing something out to tell you how poorly you all play this.
Yes, yes. Okay, an Apple TV Plus character who's kind of human.
Wait, Sarah
drama.
Still hasn't guessed her.
I know.
Even though she asked a question.
I'm recapping.
And I could technically count that as her question. I'm not going to.
Okay.
The question was, is it a dramedy? The answer was yes.
Oh, okay.
My mind has now emptied.
Oh, I think I got it.
Of Apple TV. Would you like to tell me the name of another Apple TV Plus?
I would.
Oh, wait, no, hang on. Are we saying dramedy?
I didn't say that. I was giving you the verbiage used and my answer to it. Sarah, do you have an actual question for me or I'm going to buzz you on time here?
Buzz me.
Is it from Dickinson? Is it Death?
It is Death, and that is our first point. Now, What can you tell us about your Dickinson blurb in the book in under 30 seconds, if you can, Bo?
I think
30 seconds are up.
Okay, sorry. No, I want more time.
I gotta put that on the end of the show, but because if there's like a 5-minute thing in the middle of game time, people can get angry at me and at you. So what you're saying, Mo, is that Dickinson in the index is not necessarily a bad thing.
Nope.
You can hear the preamble to that after the show. Now let's get to our second question. Mo, let's start off with you. It is a character in the TV show mentioned in said book, Burn It Down.
Is it a female character?
No. Sarah?
Is it on a network program?
Yes.
Is that network Fox?
No. Tara?
Is it NBC?
No. Mo?
Is it ABC?
It is.
Is it a character on the great television comedy Abbott Elementary?
It is not.
Is it on another comedy?
It is not.
Is it on a drama?
It is.
Is it on drama that's still on?
No.
Well. Is it a drama in which the creative team included Shonda Rhimes?
No.
Good question. Was it a procedural drama?
No.
Was it Lost? Okay.
Character from Lost.
Yeah. Was it Locke?
No. Oh, okay. Not female. That was the other clue, I think.
Yeah, you said not female. Locke is not female.
I know. I'm just reminding people at the start of this question series. That was a question. That was out.
Right.
All right.
Is it Michael?
Is it Walt?
Is it Jack?
Is it Hugo?
You guys are going to be so mad when you hear the answer.
Oh, no.
Is it, what's his name, who lived in the hatch? I forget.
Ben.
His name.
Thank not you. Ben. I mean, you've already said it, the character was not... Okay, is it the fucking smoke monster?
Okay. Wait, are you saying we're saying the smoke monster is a man?
No, I'm saying that you just said it's not female.
Oh, I see.
We didn't establish
that
it's male.
You're absolutely right. But it's not. Not the smoke monster.
Is it Mr. Echo?
Is it the bear? I guess we don't know if that's male.
No,
either.
We don't. You get a look at the undercarriage.
Oh, God, I'm running out. Oh, is it Sawyer?
Is it the dog?
No, it's not the dog. Good guess.
Okay.
Better guess than the ones we've heard so far.
Okay,
so far,
all right,
that
great.
You're getting to the level of character, I think.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Sarah?
Is it the pilot played by Sean for Felicity? I'm out of character, so somebody get this, please.
Okay, is the character human? Okay. Is the character alive in the show? Okay, is it one of the like island guards whose name I don't know? Okay.
Like the others or whatever?
No. Like one of the people that are like the forever.
It's not. I don't know. Okay. Either way, it's not.
All right, great.
Timo.
Oh, I have one of two, and I know I'm going to pick the wrong one. Is it Ben Linus?
It's already been guessed. Oh, no, you said the hatch guy. That was, what's his face? Sorry.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just came up with one more male character. Is it Bernard? I'm out.
Okay.
I can't think of any more either. I truly can't.
All right, I'll give you a hint. You guess, Tara, Mo guesses, and then I'll give you a hint when the top of the batting order again. Or you can just pass.
Okay, is it the guy from the episode everyone hates, Keely Sanchez's boyfriend from the tailies? Okay.
No. Mo.
Is it the man in black?
No. All right. This person.
Oh, damn it. Come on.
This person is infamous for only being in the pilot.
Uh, the, I don't know, someone else from the band? I stopped watching.
It's not the pilot. You've just established that. Is it the security guard at the airport?
All right, Mo, what do you think?
I'm so lost. Who's a man who's only literally lost. I'm only a dude only in the pilot. I should know this.
All right, we don't get this out of this.
Not arts, because arts comes back. I don't know. I'm out. I don't know.
We are talking about, I'm calling this one, Gary Troop, the character that gets sucked into the engine in the pilot.
Oh, and that's why Arts came to mind, because Arts got Arts all over everyone, and this is a different guy who got splatted.
All right, okay, no points there. The now, Mo, lost. Would you say this is a positive entry in the index of Burn It Down or a negative one?
Do a Chen check-in style.
I'm lost here. Lost experience. as told in Burn It Down, are people in for a feel-good time, or are they given something to think about?
Something to think about, for sure.
Great.
Next one up, we'll start with you again, Mo, since there's no points here. It is a lyric from a TV show mentioned in the index. Well, it's in the index of Burn It Down.
Wait, the lyric is mentioned in the index, or the show is mentioned?
No. The show, the filter. Yeah. The show is, it is a lyric from that show.
Is it a comedy program?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay.
I was way off.
Yep, me too.
You get a guess again?
And so, just so I'm clear, the actual lyric from the theme song is not mentioned in the book?
The show it is from.
The show is mentioned. Okay.
May not be the theme song either.
Right.
That wasn't specified.
I'm now gonna find out whether I mentioned Cheers in the index. I can't remember.
Can't tell you that for sure, but I can tell you that is not what we're talking about.
It's okay. Not Cheers. Okay.
Not Cheers.
All right.
Is the lyric from the theme song?
Yes.
This is a network comedy. We didn't establish it's a network.
Yes, it is.
Is that network ABC?
It is an NBC.
It is not.
Is it CBS?
Nope.
It's not my turn.
No, it's Sarah's turn.
It's my turn.
Sorry.
I just have
She's
we.
Really good
I'm sorry. Which networks have we said already?
ABC, NBC, CBS have been said.
Okay, so is it a Fox show?
Is it a CW show? Is it from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend? Oh. So we have to go line by line through the theme song of this song?
There's so many ways to filter stuff. I don't want to tell you your strategy, but it's up to you to start when you want to decide to actually give out lyrics or when you want to stop filtering.
Okay.
This is me channeling Dr. Calhoun.
Okay.
Who is mean and nasty about it, but he's right.
Okay. Is it from the season one version of the theme? Okay.
Is it just the word blam?
It is. Yeah! It is the word blam. You have guessed it out of the blue. I am
also thank you for saving me, because I would have just had to pass.
This is my Emmy. I am so excited.
From Catherine's brain to yours.
Incredible.
All right. Let's do one more here. Our next and last one is a TV. Let's do location.
Okay.
TV location. We'll start with Tart.
Is it from a show that's still on?
It is not.
Is it from a broadcast program?
No. I will say, not to give away more clues, but just in the interest of moving us along, not here. Anyways, I don't know the providence of this program.
Oh, okay.
Maybe is where
sure.
it started.
Got it.
That's a good clue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I don't know the provenance of this program. Okay. Is it a comedy? Is it American? I don't know what you mean by here, actually.
Is it British? Okay. Is it from the British version of The Office?
Could you restate the question?
It's a location from a comedy that is British, that is not The Office.
Is it Dairy Girls?
Oh. So technically, oh, yes, it is. It's well
British.
Done, Dave.
Yeah.
Good job.
Is it? Oh, dude, I got to think about it.
Made in Britain, not about Britain. So it's a location from the Dairy Girls.
Location from Dairy Girls. So many options. Is it the Catholic school they attend?
Yes.
Almost had it.
Is it dairy?
Not. Is it the character itself, if you ask me. Glasses push.
Is it the is it the apartment they set on fire?
No.
Is it the candy shop where the guy is just incandescently angry all the time?
Dennis's Wee Shop is the answer.
No! Wow.
Yes, we will accept that. And that means that
Gorgeous.
We have a winner with our
part
one.
Yeah, we do.
Valued guest.
Dairy Girls. Thank we happy you. With Dairy Girls in Burn It Down?
Very happy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Phew.
I actually, just again, because I'm a pro at this, you're noticing how good I am at the podcast game. I compare and contrast it to Reservation Dogs.
Love
talk
to
about
hear
the
it.
Idea of no one wants a very special episode. Like, you know, mm-hmm. the creator of Dairy Girls grew up with very special episodes or grim dark stuff about Northern Ireland. And she's like, what
totally.
If teens were just horny? And made mm-hmm. a show about that.
More
and
shows should
dumb,
be, honestly.
You know, and I love that for them. Yeah.
As heard on this very podcast.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We kept our discussion of the Full Monty's TV sequel to the bare minimum before going around the dial with stops at Never Have I Ever, I, Tina, Real Housewives of New Jersey, and Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We had an easy time finding a canon placement for Reservation Dogs' Stay Gold, Cheesy Boy. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Mo was the winner of this week's Game Time from at EHG Assist. Next up is Project Runway All-Stars on Extra Extra Hot Great. And right here on EHG Prime next week, it is the new season of Black Mirror. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
that's Queen of Love to you.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Old ladies hold shit down.
And Mo Ryan.
Stay gold.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Grit.
How's the toast? Want more? Be nicer with butter, wouldn't it? You guys don't deserve butter. Eat your cornflakes. Enjoy the strange orange drink. It had no label on it.
So good.
It is death, and that
Yay.
Is our first
nice.
Point. Now, what can you tell
Damn
us about
it.
Your Dickinson blurb in the book in under 30 seconds, if you can, Bo?
Oh, wait, first of all, I'm going to name drop and be a fangirl at the same time. I went to the ATX TV Festival Woo. A week ago. And I saw one, Tara Ariano. My favorite part of the fest, one of my many favorite parts, was my first panel that I moderated on day one or day two, I introduced myself as Tara Ariano.
She did.
And confused. And she was sitting there, and it was like, people were like, what's happening? I confused
I didn't
everyone.
Know that. You didn't tell
it was
that.
Very
I was, I forgot.
Fun.
I was very touched that people applauded.
It was very funny.
Look, Mo, one's enough.
I need to enjoy. That's going to be now my new thing at panels is like, hi, I'm Sarah D. Bunting.
All right, so Dickinson. What's the deal with Dickinson?
So I met the creator of Dickinson, Elena Smith, at ATX. She was there on various panels. She was very engaging and delightful. And I got to fangirl her in person, which was a personal goal of mine. So bucket list is finished now, I think. Until I have to meet Wiz Khalifa first as well. So then it'll be really done. He is the actor who plays Death on Dickinson. And I talked about the show being a show that does swing for the fences and creatively takes a lot of risks. But I spoke to the executive producer and one of the core directors of Dickinson for the book, Silas Howard, who talked about how the concept of power, we often talk about it as abuse of power. What can go wrong with power? So much of our culture in any arena is like, what did someone do with their power and how was that bad? And there's any number of permutations that can take. But I thought the conversation with Silas was so interesting because he said, when you have power, it can feel uncomfortable, if you were not raised or just with the mentality or the idea that you would have power. And this is something I think about a lot. I know I'm among friends. Hopefully this won't sound douchey. I have a power too now, and I have the power to, when I send a white man in the industry an email, I can make him fear, like have a panic attack. So my subject lines are often, and I just honestly, anyone who identifies as male of any other heritage, like I have to put in the subject line, this is not a bad email. Because literally people have had heart attacks where they're like, oh God, why is my email? I'm like, because I wanted to just ask you something, like as like a person. And by the way, standard disclaimer, people of all genders can be terrible. I like to make sure that we all know that it's not a fully level playing field. But, you know, as Silas talked about, what do you do when you inarguably have power on set? If you're the director of the episode, yeah, you answer to the network, the studio, the show, you know, like you may not be the showrunner. So like there's people you answer to. It's not like you're God. But within that environment, okay, these are the scenes we're shooting today. This is what we're doing. I talked to Leslie Linka-Glatter, the head of the DGA, who's also a very prolific and wonderful director. How do you use the power that you do definitely have in that moment? And Silas talked about, you know, in Dickinson, it's a very interesting mixture of tones. And he said, I want everyone to feel comfortable to make mistakes, to try something and have it not work. And I think that that's a huge element of this. It's an important thing to talk about. Because when we're talking about abuse of power, misconduct, all the other things that Hollywood loves to do or engage in or, you know, let people play around with, we do have to talk about, we're not, you know, people should be able to try things. People should be able to make mistakes. You know, as human beings, if someone makes a mistake, that depending on what it is, there's a whole range of things that should not be career ending or whatever, or job ending, if you will. So I thought it was just great that Silas talked about, I had to figure out how to use the power I had and bring other people into that process in a way that made them understand that as people on the set, in the crew or in the acting ensemble, you can, you know, mess around or do something, try something in a take and it doesn't work in the moment or in the edit, we realize that doesn't work at all. But I think that there's a form of trust that you can establish with that power that Silas talks about really eloquently. And, you know, part of what I'm trying to do with the book is make people understand that I understand that these are difficult jobs. You don't wake up in the morning one day knowing how to be a director or the head of a company or even a mid-level executive at a company or a showrunner.
So if Dickinson people are looking at the index in your book, and they're like, yeah, oh shit, Dickinson's in this book. It's okay.
It's okay. I feel like there should have been some kind of symbol system in that index.
Yes.
Now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be a little thumbs up, little cringe emoji. I think it'd be 30 seconds are up.
Okay, sorry. No, I want more time.